panic stations in Paris, an emergency brainstorming session of European leaders taking place in the French capital, not Brussels, where NATO's strongest power no longer seems a reliable ally to some. Can leaders figure out on the fly a way to shore up Ukraine and rewrite the playbook on European defense? This as the Trump administration makes good on what it said it would do, sit down with Putin's Russia and shut allies out of negotiations. We'll ask about last weekend's Munich Security Conference and a U.S. vice president who told Europe the U.S. was going over its head, even chastised German hosts who vote next Sunday for refusing to govern with a Nazi-rooted party. We'll also ask about Europe's military means and deterrence. During the Cold War, deterrence included nuclear weapons. France and the UK have them, enough, though, to make Moscow think twice. Today in the France 24 debate, are we witnessing the death of NATO? Joining us from Brussels, former commander of Estonia's defense forces, Rio Terras, is a member of the European Parliament. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello. Good evening.
He's also a retired general from Guéret in the center of France, former French Air Force chief of staff, Jean-Paul Paloméros. You're a former member of the NATO senior command. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for your invitation.
She's a former NATO political officer, Samantha De Bender, an associate fellow at the think tank Chatham House. Welcome back.
Good evening.
And he's a former Moscow correspondent who in normal times would be squarely focused on the Berlin Film Festival taking place where you are. But are these normal times, France 24 correspondent Nick Spicer?
Nick Holdsworth, actually.
Nick Holdsworth, excuse me, for your predecessors, Nick Spicer.
Yeah, my predecessor. Not normal times at all, and unseasonably freezing cold here in Berlin, so you'll excuse the woolly hat. I am trying to keep a cool head because things have been pretty heated up the last few days, haven't they?
Well, they have. We'll talk about it. By the way, you can listen, like, and subscribe to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, they've been heated. They've even sometimes been emotional. Dateline Munich on Sunday. The longtime organizer of the world's most prestigious security conference gets emotional in his closing address when he pleads for the preservation of a rules-based international order.
So let us stick to these values. Let us not reinvent them, but focus on strengthening their consistent application. Let me conclude, and this becomes difficult.
There's a feeling when you watch those images, Samantha, is that the day that NATO died almost?
Well, I think it's a little bit premature to talk about the death of NATO. It certainly seems to be weakened. I would say maybe even suffering from an autoimmune disease, because the link that seems to be weakening NATO is coming from within, is coming from its strongest ally, from the most powerful military country which is in this alliance, which is the United States. The speech by Vice President J.D. Vance in Munich was a very stark departure from the kind of speeches one makes at Munich, which is a security forum, which is to talk about geopolitical issues. And J.D. Vance made a scathing attack on Europe, on European policies, on internal politics of a European country. This is also a departure from an unwritten rule in US diplomacy, which is internal politics stay at home. The US does not bring its internal political problems to the outside world and does not criticize the internal political problems or not of its allies. So this is the real departure in many ways. And there was not one single mention of the real threat facing Europe and the Euro-Atlantic Alliance today, which is Russia. So it was a stark departure. These were not the words of an ally at Munich. They were more the words of somebody who is positioning themselves on the outside, looking in. And this follows, of course, from the Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's speech in NATO the day before, when he said very clearly, for the United States, Europe's security is no longer a priority. And what's so extraordinary is that on the one hand, the United States is saying to Europe, your security is no longer our priority, and at the same time, it starts meddling inside the internal politics of European countries. That is what's so extraordinary. It's a kind of, you know, Schrödinger's policies. You know, it's neither dead nor alive, and it's both at the same time. It's really extraordinary, and one can understand the emotions that that have been expressing themselves.
Yeah, Rio Terrace, those are real tears we saw from Christoph Heugsen. How do you explain that shock?
Well, we are living in very, very difficult and challenging times, but I'm first of all convinced that NATO still exists and is the most powerful alliance in the world. We have had tough times before, but one thing is clear, whatever we do, Europe must do more. And that is what American presidents, starting from Barack Obama, have said always, that Europe must take more responsibility and start to pay for its security. I heard, surprisingly, that this weekend has been a wake-up call. It was a surprise because, in my opinion, the wake-up call was 2008, as Russia attacked Georgia, 2014, Ukraine. But we were not waking up, and that is the problem. But,
Again, the he seems surprised, and this is the organizer of the Munich Security Conference. He seems surprised when he gets emotional there in his closing speech.
Now, yeah, again, as I said, he should not be surprised. If he would have listened, the same conference, Putin 2007 announced that Ukraine is not a country, Crimea belongs to Russia, and he wants to rearrange the security structure in Europe. I was sitting the same place with probably him together, and some people were laughing about Putin. But who Putin meant business, and since then, many European countries, like our country, have paid a lot for defense. We are now about 4% of the GDP. Unfortunately, Estonia is too small. So I hope that the big countries like UK, France and Germany will really take it seriously, and not talking about Spain and Italy, whose defense expenditures are really below normal.
Jean-Paul Palmeiros, how will history remember this Munich Security Conference?
Well, I'm really in line with Riho, because we have warned since a long time that could happen. As soon as we knew that Mr. Trump was elected in November, and even well before. So there is no real surprise, but the matter of the truth is that everybody now is seeing the two pillars of our NATO alliance shaking together. I mean, the political one, and the Mr. Vance speech was really a dire attack on the political nature of NATO, which is based on the consensus, on value, on democratic values, and on common interest. And on the other side, obviously, the threat of the U.S. reducing their effort, not only in NATO, but for Ukraine, is obviously very worrying, because us as Europeans, we have not been able to face the issue before. That's okay. That's not okay, but this is a fact. Now we have to work in a rush in a certain way, which is not good, but nevertheless, we have to make some damage control on the short term, prepare the middle and the long term. But first and foremost, we must make sure that at a certain stage, Europe takes its place in the discussion between Russia and between the United States. It's not a bad thing that the US and the US and Russia are meeting. They are two big players. Nevertheless, Europe is at the forefront of this discussion. So I think that the meeting of today is quite crucial with all the players, including the NATO Secretary General, and so on and so forth. So let's see what is happening. But we hope that Europe will be strong and will assume its full role in NATO and support of Ukraine.
Yeah, a meeting preceded in Paris by a summit preceding it in Paris by a phone call between France's President Emmanuel Macron and his U.S. counterpart, Donald Trump. That meeting still going on as we speak at the Élysée Palace. Jean-Paul Palomeros there talking about the need to go fast. Let's cross now to France 24's James André, who is at the presidential palace. James, how much in a hurry, how much improvisation, I could ask, went into this summit? How quickly did it come about?
Well, look, it came about very quickly indeed. And actually, it's interesting because the Élysée Palace has really stressed the fact that, to them, this is not a summit. This is an informal meeting between the leaders of, you know, a group of European countries, which are defined here as being the countries that are willing and able to act upon what's been happening this weekend in Munich and reacting to this phone call between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. And also, well, yes, the European Union, who is represented here by Ursula von der Leyen, and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. Actually, when he arrived here, the journalist here called out and said, you know, is this the end of NATO? And his answer was a resounding no. But indeed, yes, well, this was a hastily organized meeting. And of course, it's a meeting that is one that has been, you know, put up, and it's an emergency. And we haven't had much coming out of it for now, as you can probably see behind me, the cars of all the leaders are still here. There's only one who's left, and that is Olaf Scholz. Olaf Scholz, who actually spoke from the German embassy here in Paris, saying that indeed he considered, and this is quite a strong statement, he said, you know, Europeans and Americans mustn't be divided when it comes to security of Europe. He also said that Germany would consider some financial, you know, to break the financial rules, if you will, and to authorize countries to go over the famous 3% deficit rule if it was to finance military spending in excess of 2% of their GDP. Also saying, and this is also interesting because this is a different position to that of France and the UK, and who have been saying that they were ready potentially to send peacekeepers into Ukraine if indeed a peace deal is reached. Well, for the German Chancellor, this is not on the table at the moment. He considers it is too early to speak of this situation. He says for now this peace deal has not been brokered, and he's saying all these discussions are taking place behind the back of Ukraine, and that of course Ukraine needs to be consulted. So we have different positions here when it comes to what to do. The Polish are aligned with the Germans, by the way. So we have different positions as to what needs to be done immediately after the peace, and of course there is all the long-term negotiation when it comes to the security framework of Europe.
The security framework of Europe, which is also important. James André, we'll be crossing back live to you when there's more from there. Many thanks for joining us here in the France 24 debate. Let me ask you, Rio Terrace, this issue of what you would like to see come out of this summit, or informal gathering, excuse me, we're not supposed to call it a summit.
Yeah, first and foremost, I don't like it be called emergency summit, which of course shows the world that NATO was not ready for that kind of statements. I would say important is to make sure that the message coming out of this meeting will be a very unified message, that NATO will show resolve and unity, because NATO's strength is unity.
But if this was unity, Rio Terrace.
With what money, how much money we could stand behind Ukraine to win this war, because Russia is losing this war right now, despite their messaging from Russian side saying that Ukraine is losing. But we need to show a very clear resolve. And the other thing which we need to make sure is that Putin believes in NATO. We do believe in NATO, and I'm absolutely convinced that Mark Rutte is right saying so. But more importantly, whether Chairman Xi and President Putin believing in NATO, because NATO is only as strong as his enemies take it. So I think very clear messages, but not only, very clear acts coming out of this summit would be something which I would like to see.
You talk about it being a moment of unity, Rio Terrace, but if it was a moment of unity for NATO, the meeting would be held in Brussels, not in Paris.
I don't think it makes any difference where the meeting is. The main thing is people coming out of it should have one single clear message and in the package their decisions about how they will act and what are the actions taken after this meeting.
Samantha De Bender.
Yeah, I agree with you, François. If this were a NATO meeting, it would be taking place at NATO headquarters. It would be the North Atlantic Council meeting. And the reason this what we're not allowed to call a summit is taking place in Paris today is in response to the very harsh words from Defence Minister, Defence Secretary Hegseth, and also after the speech by Vice President J.D. Vance in Munich. This is not a meeting of NATO members. This is not even a meeting of EU, some kind of EU defence body. You have only a few EU countries present. You have the United Kingdom, which is present. So this is an attempt to show unity amongst a coalition or potential coalition of the willing. But there, where I agree, in fact, with someone like Chancellor Scholz, who's being very cautious about troops on the ground, and the Poles as well are being very cautious about troops on the ground. And although in principle they could potentially take place, to take part of something, we don't know what they would be there to do. Would European countries, for instance, go to Ukraine to help Ukraine with it, give it security guarantees if Ukraine does not agree to any kind of peace deal which is negotiated above its head between Putin and Trump? There are so many questions that need to be asked first. Would European countries want to go to Ukraine to help enforce a peace deal which is imposed upon us as Europeans, by the Americans and the Russians? There's so many very, very gritty questions, and we don't have no idea what's going to come out of these talks. Zelensky has been very clear he will not agree to any peace deal in which he is not part of the negotiations. So I think we're very, very far from knowing what we're going to see and what kind of peace or not potential European plus British troops would be defending, keeping, enforcing. It's very, very early days still. Mm.
Well, the Europeans have been united in one message, and that is that they want to be in on the bargaining at the summit in Paris. However, the message from Moscow on Ukraine, two's company, three's a crowd.
I don't know what they should do at the negotiating table. If they are going to wheedle out some sly ideas about freezing the conflict, while they themselves, according to their custom and their character and habits, will have in mind the continuation of the war, then why invite them here?
All right, so Europe is not welcome. Vladimir Putin has not gotten the better of NATO, but it seems as though the cold has gotten the better of Nick Holdsworth, who's moved indoors. Nick, as a former Moscow correspondent, your reaction to that clip we just heard of Sergei Lavrov?
Well, I think the Russians feel that they're on the front foot here, that this is a sort of a diplomatic advance. All their red lines have already been conceded by President Trump. They've very firmly said they're not willing to give up any territory, and that includes territory they haven't even conquered.
And, Nick, I'm going to cut you off because we're having a bit of audio issues. We'll try to fix those and raise the level on the audio and then get back to you. Jean-Paul Palomeros, have you been conferring with your former U.S. Equivalents from NATO over the last 48 hours? What are they telling you?
Well, they are telling me that the Europeans should have done much more before. I mean, since Dwight Eisenhower was Supreme Allied Commander in Europe, the message has been there. And now Mr. Trump is meaning it. He's meaning, this is the last call, I would say. So this is why this meeting is so important. It's now we have to really move the European defense together, including the UK. That's very important to show to walk the talk in a certain way, to show that we are ready really to take that seriously, to balance the military efforts in NATO with the US, to take Mr. Trump by his word, to leverage the percentage of the GDP. Just a side note, France is well over, unfortunately, 3% deficit. So let's see how the French will assume their responsibility in that field. But this is an internal issue. And more on that is that we should assume the short term as well, because the negotiations behind the negotiations, the question is, would the U.S. continue, keep on supporting Ukraine during those days, or will they stop? If they stop, we have done a real crisis, because the Europeans are not able to fulfill the role so far, and then Mr. Putin will be delighted to see that happening.
All right. You mentioned the UK there. The UK and France, they're both nuclear powers. During the Cold War, there was the so-called language of deterrence. What does their power of deterrence mean, those countries, those nuclear powers, without the United States?
Well, France is an independent nuclear power. Everything has been done since General de Gaulle to keep that sovereignty. But the French presidents, few of them, have said that the vital interests of Europe are very close and perhaps mixed with the national, sovereign, and vital interests of France. That opens the way for strategic discussion within Europe more than ever about what is nuclear deterrence.
If you only read the headlines, well, here's a bombshell. Starmer, I'm ready to put troops in Ukraine. That was splashed across the front page of the Daily Telegraph. The UK Prime Minister penning a column that doesn't stipulate in the column itself whether, in fact, images of Keir Starmer now exiting the Elysee Palace. Let's see if we can, if he'll stop for reporters. No, it looks like he will not this time. He will be speaking, apparently, at the British Embassy, which is just a couple of doors down. He says that he's, by the way, going to Washington in the coming days. He says we can't have a deal without Ukraine. And a situation like Afghanistan, where the U.S. government negotiated directly with the Taliban and cut out the Afghan government, is unacceptable. Quote, I feel sure that President Trump will want to avoid this, too. Kind of conciliatory language aimed at Washington before he makes that trip that he repeated later in the day.
I think what the US wants to achieve is lasting peace in Ukraine that aligns precisely with what we want in the United Kingdom, what Ukraine wants, and what our European allies want. What we now need to do is to make sure that we work together on a plan that can get us to that point.
So, Samantha de Benturn, the UK calling out the US saying you can't do this the way you did it in Afghanistan. And he's clearly calling out Donald Trump because that was him who decided to negotiate directly with the Taliban. But at the same time, trying to keep Trump on board. Is this the way to go about it?
Well, it's certainly the way Keir Starmer thinks he should go about it. So the UK is in a very difficult position when it comes to the US, because on the one hand, the US is threatening the UK with steel tariffs and other tariffs. The UK, which has gone alone, has very little negotiating power on any kind of foreign trade issues with the United States. So Keir Starmer does not want to irritate Donald Trump. And Keir Starmer also has said he would like to see himself as a bridge between the EU and the United States on these defense issues. So I think that he's doing everything he can to try and bring Donald Trump on board with the European view of what needs to be done regarding Ukraine without alienating the United States, because the United Kingdom really needs the United States right now. And to the extent that the UK said they would not even retaliate if tariffs are put on the UK. So Keir Starmer will try to continue to I think it's a very admirable thing to want to try and do. Whether he will be successful or not is a completely different question. He seems to think he can influence Donald Trump to see things through European eyes. Personally, I don't think he's going to be successful, but, you know.
So what else should he have done?
Well, he could have been very firm. He could have called Donald Trump out and said, listen, what you're doing is espousing Putin's worldview. But I cannot imagine a British prime minister going that far at this point, absolutely, considering all the other issues that the United Kingdom is facing. I can't see that.
Rio Terrace, if the U.S. cuts a deal directly with Russia and goes the whole way here, would Estonia be threatened? Would Putin have designs for an attack on Estonia?
Well, first of all, I don't see how it can happen without Ukraine and Europe. So there is no deal about Europe without Europe. And they can agree whatever they want. President Zelensky and his armed forces will not agree with it and keep fighting. And I don't understand the talks about the peacekeeping troops in Ukraine. I think it is quite nonsense, because Ukraine is able to defend its borders, its current frontline.
While you're speaking, by the way, I'm interrupting you for a second there.
Succeed anywhere.
I'm interrupting you because we just saw Mette Frederiksen, the Danish prime minister, exit the French presidential palace. She was representing the Nordic and Baltic states at this meeting. Do you regret the fact that the meeting wasn't extended to your country?
Well, I'm sure that she was representing Nordic Baltic properly. I think the smaller format gives you a better possibility to come to good decisions. But again, no deal without Europe, over Europe, and I'm sure that will happen. I think what we need for Ukraine in the future is the NATO membership. Nobody can tell an independent country whether it can join any of the alliances. It's up to the NATO member states to decide about it, and that is the only guarantee which can be given. But I have already, in May 22, together with General Breedlow and General Shirov and other retired generals, called for control of airspace over Ukraine. And I'm still convinced that that is something which NATO countries, either in the framework of NATO or a coalition of willing, can do to save many, many lives which Russia is attacking, civilians, children, mothers, etc. I think these are things which Europe... Europe's big countries and Europe together and NATO countries together can provide to Ukraine. But that is all possible only if there is a kind of a fair and just peace. And agreements like Minsk show that this is something just to postpone the next conflict or next war, next attack from the Russia, giving Russia time to regroup. And that we should not do. And I think we should very quickly start to use Russian frozen assets to support Ukraine. We should solve the money problem ourselves and be with Ukraine, because it's not what's happening in Ukraine is not about Ukraine. It's about the whole Europe and our values. And Estonia, if you ask whether we are afraid, no, we are not afraid. We are prepared. We are spending 4% of the GDP on defense. Of course, Estonian pensioners, old people and children would like to have a better social guarantees, but the Estonian people have decided to pay more for defense because they understand what it is all about. And I hope that countries who have not a direct border with Russia will understand that there's something like burden sharing is very important, and that NATO countries together will decide 3% or more allocated for defense very quickly and very soon. Because otherwise we will not be able to deal with the threat situation with or without the United States. But yeah. I'm still convinced we will do it with the United States.
With or without the United States, but you're convinced with. Clearly there's an agreement not to speak to reporters. We saw the president of the European Council and the European Commission make their exit there from the presidential palace live. And they're not usually camera shy. Jean-Paul Palomeros, you just heard Riho Terras talk about controlling Ukraine's airspace as a former head of the French Air Force. Can that be done without the United States?
That we could certainly achieve something with the U.S., the U.K., Royal Air Force, the French, and the German together, I would say, and some others as well. But that will make us belligerent. We must face the two, and our countries have decided not to be involved as directly in the war, and I cannot see that changing, and certainly not on the short term. This is one point. The other point I would like to stress, this is that already well before the discussions between Russia and the USA, Mr. Putin has won part of the battle because Mr. Trump has really stated very firmly that NATO was not an option for the future of Ukraine. And I feel this is very sorry. I'm very sorry about that. Obviously, the mandate of a U.S. president is 4 years, but 4 years will be a long, long time for Ukraine. So Mr. Putin should be happy with that. I hope that Mr. Trump will not go further in giving more freedom of maneuver for Putin in Ukraine.
Now, I asked Riho Terras whether Estonia was prepared in case of a Russian attack. What about France? Because there are more than 1,000 French troops in Romania. There are some 200 French troops right now in Estonia. If there was a confrontation, is France prepared for a direct confrontation? It seems unimaginable. It's never happened during the entirety of the Cold War. But is France prepared?
Well, I would say if you look to the French military forces, I would say yes. We know that as far as the number is concerned, obviously, like any European countries, we have a problem of against the high density, high intensity warfare and on the long term. But nevertheless, we have high-end capacity, high-end capability. Nevertheless, the question is more on the support of the people. And this is why I think we need a very clear and strong voice out of the politician in France to make sure that the French people understand what is at stake, that freedom comes with a price. And then it is time really to take that very seriously, because in a few months, in a few years, it could be too late if we let that down. So yes, the answer is yes, but
sitting here in Paris, Samantha de Bendern, General Palomeros saying public opinion right now doesn't see this as a direct security threat for the most part.
No, I think very few public opinions.
Are we overstating it?
Are we overstating the threat?
Here I am asking about whether or not Estonia and France are ready in case of a direct
confrontation. Well, let's put it this way.
Is that a far-fetched question?
I don't think it's a far-fetched question at all. I think that the threat is real, and I'm basing that thought on the fact that a lot of European intelligence agencies think that that threat is real. So how could this threat play out? One idea that has actually been put forward by a colleague of mine at Chatham House called Keir Giles is that in order to deter France or another NATO member state from coming to the rescue of a country like Estonia, one could imagine a two-pronged attack, an attack on Estonia, for instance, and I apologise that we're using Estonia as the example, but it does seem to be one of the most likely candidates for an attack. And at the same time, a missile attack on a European city to put absolute fear into the minds of the electorate in Germany, in France and somewhere else, to then dissuade public opinion from encouraging the idea of coming to the defence of a country like Estonia, which seems far away. What would happen then is that NATO would then cease to exist. We're talking about whether NATO is dead. NATO is not dead today. But if a NATO member is attacked, and for whatever reason, other members do not agree to invoke Article 5, which is the mutual, which is the idea that an attack on one is an attack on all, or do not give an adequate response in an Article 5 situation, then we have the death of NATO. So would public opinion respond? It's up to the politicians to explain that France's defence, Germany's defence is part of NATO at the moment, and that without NATO, it will be a lot more expensive to keep that defence. People often think about their bottom lines, and this is what it would be about at the end of the day.
NATO's not dead, you say, but it is in trouble. And for instance, just remind people, well, Russia bombed a cover built to contain radiation at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant last week. J.D. Vance saw danger elsewhere, the U.S. vice president at the Munich Security Conference.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
Nick Holdsworth, J.D. Vance in that speech then goes on to chastise his hosts for refusing to invite the far-right AFD to the conference, the far-right AFD, which has pro-Putin views often, and which is polling second in next Sunday's general election.
It is indeed. It slightly has upped its poll numbers from about 20.3% to about 21%. If it does get those number of votes, it's going to double its seats in the Reichstag, in the Bundestag, the German parliament. And it's going to have an influence, even though the remaining parties say that they will maintain the firewall, the so-called...
What's the reaction where you are, Nick, to J.D. Vance on stage, basically endorsing electoral alliances with the far right?
People are horrified. I mean, there were 200,000 people out on the streets of Berlin just yesterday protesting against the AFD. It's horrified the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz. He sharply rebuked Vance for interfering in domestic German politics. It's delighted the Russians. The Russian Speaker of the Russian Duma, the Parliament, Vyacheslav Volodin, said that J.D. Vance had called out Europe correctly and had identified failures in European democracy, as if Volodin is in a position to lecture Europe on democracy. The Russians are delighted. A Russian TV commentator said that Vance had given the Europeans a good caning.
A good caning, as we're watching images of Giorgia Meloni exiting the Élysée Palace with Emmanuel Macron, the Italy's leader, who stood by her president, Nick Holdsworth, in a row over President Mattarella calling what's going on in Moscow Nazism at this time. And right now, where you are standing, they're talking about this on the campaign trail. I know there's a second night of lead candidates debate later. That's why Olaf Scholz left the meeting early here in Paris. One of those issues is, and this is what Rio Terrace has been telling us about in this discussion, spending more and carving out an exception for defense. How popular, though, is that in Germany?
It's not very popular at all. The Germans have suffered a couple of years of recession. Most Germans are concerned about the bottom line, the cost of a basket of shopping in the local supermarket, whether pensions are going to increase in line with inflation, that sort of thing. But we do have the front runner in the elections for the next Chancellor, Friedrich Merz of the CDU, saying that he will spend more on defence. Scholz saying, yes, we'll spend more on defence, but not quite as assertive as Friedrich Merz. Although we should remember that Friedrich Merz was the politician who accepted the support of the AfD in a anti-immigration vote in Parliament just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you were mentioning it earlier, Samantha de Bender, and the fact that for the time being, Europeans are saying this won't happen without us. But could it?
I think, you know, we've entered a world where anything is possible. I mean, you know, we've been the idea 3 years ago, and we're approaching 3 years of the beginning of war in, well, the beginning of the second phase of the war in Ukraine. You know, there were debates, you know, whether we would send, more anti-tank missile launchers. Now we're actually talking about putting boots on the ground. I think that we have come to a stage where anything is possible. Who would have imagined even a year ago? In spite of the warnings the United States were giving us about disengagement from Europe, such hostile rhetoric coming from both J.D. Vance and Pete Hegseth. So I think we have come into a world where anything's possible. What else is Europe going to do? Is Europe going to abandon Ukraine? I honestly don't see that happening yet. And if it does, it will make the world a lot more dangerous for all of us in Paris, in London, in Berlin, and potentially even in Washington.
Ukraine's president in the United Arab Emirates this Monday before Turkey, and he'll be in Saudi Arabia Wednesday. That's after U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio speaks with his Russian counterparts. Here was Zelensky speaking by video link to journalists back home earlier.
Ukraine is not participating in the upcoming negotiations. Ukraine knew nothing about it. Ukraine regards any negotiations on Ukraine without Ukraine as negotiations with no result, and we cannot acknowledge anything, any arrangements about us that were made without us.
Rio Terrace, what do you do now in this case? What do European leaders do? There you have Volodymyr Zelensky saying he's clearly been broadsided by the Trump administration.
Well, what we should do, we should stay with Ukraine and help Ukraine. We should remember that US has 350 million citizens, Russia 140, and Europe is 450 European Union plus the others. So we are second or third biggest economical power, and we're talking about we are not able to support. Of course we are. Today the support to Ukraine costs every European Union citizens 1.2 cups of coffee a month. So that means that we are able, if we would like to, we want to support Ukraine, to support Ukraine. The other thing which I would like to say is I don't understand the negative thinking on Estonia is the most possible place to where NATO is attacked. I don't see Russia able to attack NATO today whatsoever. It will be end of Putin and end of Russia if there will be any attempts. And believe me or not, but Estonians will fight as long as it is needed. We have 1939, 1940, we did not do it, and we lost 10% of the population, and Russia killed and harassed us 50 years. So we will fight, and I'm sure our allies will fight with us. The British and French soldiers and American soldiers in Estonian soil today, they will fight and NATO will function. So I have no doubt about that. The other thing is how we can support Ukraine. And as I said, we have to stand together, all European countries together behind Ukraine and increase significantly military and humanitarian support and economical support to Ukraine. And most importantly, we should have plan what we do after. It's not about how we end the war, it's about what happens after the war is ended. And there, the reconstruction of Ukraine is a very important thing, and we should always think about what happens if Russia conquers, takes over Ukraine. Then we have 40 million very angry Ukrainians against us, with all the Ukrainian resources, huge resources, which Ukraine has, and flows of refugees, which are not comparable to those which we have today. So, very easy for me to understand. We need to do more. We need to pay more. All citizens of Europe should pay more.
Should
for
pay
peace.
More. We're running short on time. I'll read what the Prime Minister of Poland has just said. We realize that transatlantic relations are in a new stage. We'll leave it there for now. I want to thank you, Samantha DeBender, and I want to thank Rio Terrace. I want to thank as well Jean-Paul Palomeros, Nick Holdsworth, our correspondent in Berlin. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.